getting in no trouble.
Nah, we're just trying to win this dance.
Club. You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on Astrotop.
We got the Refugees All Stars, Rubber Devin in the club, Y Club Jean.
Shorty got back. Should I ask him for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cats talking to her. Buying a fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another one half hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling R-E-F-U-G-E. E, get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad cause you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
In Trinidad with attorneys, yeah. My blue slang flow worldwide like a current. Went to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the math, you ain't half exotic. My man's claim true, you forget about it. Ho-ho, just a new stance, like my influence. Well recognized, you a lie trying to do it. Got you, told your lady, oops, we nuts, baby. Smooth and charismatic, automatic, you gon' save me. God bless the dead as my son survived. We strive to teach you, baby, and stay alive and alive. Yeah, nice, baby.
Welcome, I'm back. Over the flu. The past few weeks I've had the flu, so I'm sorry I haven't been in, but I'm better now, so welcome. As everybody knows, for some reason, I don't know if astronomy can explain it, but it was very cold. And right now, the Earth is the closest it is to the Sun, so it can't be explained by, well, the Earth is far away from the Sun. No, because it is the closest to the Sun as it is in the year. So it was very cold and a lot of us got sick. So welcome, I got sick. So back in the seat, back in the saddle, and saw some interesting things on TV last night about gravity and also about the Moon is in elliptical orbit around the Earth. So there's certain times of the year or certain times of the month where it's closest. And other times where it's farther away from the Earth. I think if it's closest, it's about 221,000 miles. And if it's the farthest from the Earth on its elliptical orbit, it's 251,000 miles. So last night I was watching this TV show, and there's an astronomer or a geologist, and he has predicted earthquakes before because he says when this moon is closest to the Earth, it has the greatest gravitational pull. It has a 20% stronger gravitational pull when it's closest than it is farthest. So when it's closest, this is called perigee. When it's farthest from the Earth, when the Moon is farthest from the Earth, this is called apogee. So at perigee, he's predicted that the gravitational tug from the Moon, which is 20% stronger during perigee, is the reason certain earthquakes happen at that time. So he's predicted quite a few earthquakes, and he says the gravity, the increased gravitational tug on the fault line, leads to these earthquakes. So that was a very interesting story. And the whole show was on gravity, and I talked about space-time and how Einstein revolutionized the thought process when we think about gravity, because before we weren't sure what gravity was. Well, what is gravity? We can say it's a force, so it's a pull or it's a tug. A force can be called as a pull, push, or a twist. So I guess gravity fits in there because it's a pull. So gravity, for example, the moon pulls on the Earth, and the Earth pulls on the moon. So, but we can't really, with those definitions, we still don't have a good explanation of, well, what is gravity? It's a force, okay? It's a pull. But what is it? Well, Einstein thought about space-time, and he says, space and time aren't separate entities. For example, I'm here in the UBC radio room at 3 o'clock, but there's two things that define where I am. I'm in the room, that's the place, and the time is 3 o'clock. So that's space time. Everything, if I say let's meet for lunch, okay, well, where or when no, lunch is 12 o'clock, okay. But if I say, let's just meet for lunch, you don't know where we're going to meet. So we need a place. So we need a time and a place. So that's called space-time. And Einstein revolutionized our thinking about gravity, because that's what gravity is. It's mass warps space-time, and masses then travel along this warp in space-time. So, for example, if we have an object like the Earth, usually space-time is more pronounced in where there are big masses, so the Sun or the Earth. The Earth warps the space-time around it, and our satellites are up in the sky. The signals we send from Earth to the satellites, the path of space-time has to be taken into account. So it's not a straight line. The Earth warps the space, or the space-time fabric around the Earth. So the mass of the Earth warps it, so we have to take that into account. So engineers have to calculate the corrected path. It's a curved path, and if not, our GPS wouldn't be correct. We would send a signal up, it'd send it back, and it would tell us the wrong place. So we have to correct for space-time. When an object travels around, let's say, close to the Sun is such a massive thing, it warps the space-time around it. So masses that travel in that warp space-time travel along that curved path of space-time, or that dent in space-time the Sun has made around itself. Doesn't travel in a straight line. There's another interesting thing about gravity. Last night in the show, they were talking about our Sun is going to get bigger and hotter. It's going to turn into a red giant, and in billions of years, it could engulf the Earth. So one solution to this is to push the Earth farther out. So some astronomers were speculating they could catch an asteroid or a comet. Well, asteroid, because a comet is mostly ice. It would be a lot of gas, and asteroid is mostly rock and iron. So get an asteroid, control its orbit around the Earth in such a way that it has a tug on the Earth, and it pushes the Earth farther out from the Sun. So these scientists were speculating we can control the orbit of the Earth and push the Earth farther out as the Sun is getting bigger and hotter. And then we could survive on our planet Earth, because one day, the speculation is, the Sun will become so big it'll swallow up the Earth. So there's so many interesting things about gravity, and for hundreds of years people thought, well, what's gravity? Well, Newton said it's a force, but what really is gravity? We couldn't really explain it. We had a sense of what it was, but to put it into a definition, it was more difficult. So usually a force is, you can push something, you can pull something, a twist, that's a force. So gravity was a force, so I guess gravity was a pull. It's a pull of attraction. But what happens now with with space-time and Einstein, we can more clearly define it. So today, I just looked at the NASA website, and there's a lot on Pluto. And guess what? I just looked in my glass case, and my glasses aren't there. So I looked on the website, and I saw Pluto. I looked in my glass case. I didn't see my glasses. So hopefully I can do the show without my glasses. So a lot of times I do what comes up on the NASA website. And today, for some reason, there's lots of things about Pluto and the Juno mission. As you can recall, last year, the Juno mission was the first spacecraft to fly close to Pluto. It was a risky business because Pluto has not gone around the Sun one complete orbit since we discovered it in the 1930s. So that's about 86 years ago. It's gone around maybe half or less than half of its orbit. So there were no accurate indication on Pluto's exact orbit. So when the Juno spacecraft was flying by Pluto last year, scientists weren't sure if their calculations would be correct, because they wouldn't slow down the spacecraft. The spacecraft would fly by. They'd open the cameras and the test instruments and hope that their calculation was correct, and hope that where they thought Pluto was, then that's what it would be. And guess what? They did a great job and they caught it. So there's lots of data they sent back, and citizen scientists have also been working on this data. So there's quite a few projects in NASA where citizen scientists are involved. and this is one of them. So I'm going to talk about Pluto's color map. So I may have mentioned this a few weeks ago, that prior to the Juno mission, the planet, or the ex-planet, Pluto, the dwarf planet, there wasn't a lot known about it. I think I said something like, all that was known about Pluto could fit on one or two pieces of paper. The Hubble Space Telescope couldn't image it. It was too far away. So now we found enough information on Pluto, not to rewrite the textbooks, to finally write the textbooks on Pluto. So I'm going to do an article on Pluto, and this is Pluto Global Color Map, found on www.nasa.gov. And it's dated January 19th, which is today. Okay, this new detailed global mosaic color map of Pluto is based on a series of three color filter images obtained by the Ralph Multispectral Visual Imaging Camera. So that is RMVIC aboard New Horizons during the NASA spacecraft close flyby of Pluto in July 2015. The mosaic shows how Pluto's large-scale color patterns extend beyond the hemisphere facing New Horizons at closest approach, which were imaged at the highest resolution. North is up. Pluto's equator roughly bisects the band of red and of red dark terrains running across the lower third of the map. Pluto's giant, informally named Sputnik Planitia Glacier. So there's a glacier there. Isn't that beautiful? The left half of Pluto's signature heart feature. So there's a heart on Pluto, is at the center of this map. So what we have here is a map which is imaged in three different wavelengths, and they often do that. They sometimes get infrared, microwave, and visible light, and then they put them all together to give a more detailed image. And here we have a beautiful color map of Pluto. Now, just to think, a couple years ago, we wouldn't have known anything about Pluto. And here we have this gorgeous planet, which our ex-planet, and they might, I believe, Pluto was reclassified because there could have been 1,000 objects or more similar to Pluto in the Kuiper Belt. So scientists thought, well, we have to either name those 1,000 objects planets or demote Pluto. So they demoted Pluto. But here is a stunning photo of, almost looks like the moon, but it's purplish. It's got some white glaciers. And at that distance from the sun, I believe the temperatures could be minus 250 degrees Celsius, if you can imagine how cold that was. Remember, we were pretty cold the past few weeks. So there is also different grades or thicknesses or hardnesses of ice. And I believe, there's no reason not to believe, that at minus 250 degrees, the ice would be like rock, and it wouldn't be like the ice we have here on Earth. So there are some craters. There's a lot of purple bands across Pluto. There's a left heart, as the signature says, on Sputnik Planitia Glacier, and it is, most of the picture is like a soft purplish light brown with a nice purplish band across with a lot of glaciers, and there looks like there are some craters in there. Okay, so let's move on to the next. Oh, here's a nice article, I think it would be nice to look at this one, peeking over Saturn's shoulders. But what I'm going to do first, I'm going to take a break, and then when I come back, we're going to talk more about the planets of the solar system or the ex-planets of the solar system. And again, you'll have to forgive me. Don't have my glasses, so it's difficult to cue things up. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on 101.9.
I'm Shani from NEPSI. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
We just played Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now, let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Master Dirty Red Scum!
Really?
Kill!
That's really
kill! Bad. Kill! Filthy bastard Tommy! I hate him! I hate
okay,
him!
Well,
You know, maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super's boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast.
My people singing, baby, where you at? Throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. No, 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 don't stop, we won't stop.
That's why I put it down for the west side.
That long ago,
oh, no.
We were still in 40s at the liquor store.
Oh, no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time to go.
Out to the park with the locusts.
Everybody broke, smoking roaches.
DJ Quick West had every claiming he was from the CPT.
Y'all remember?
One time tried to clown.
We had to burn this bitch on down.
Welcome back, Marco and AstroTalk, and guess what? It is a weird day today. I just found my glasses. They were on my head, and things went wrong, and it happens, doesn't it? Couldn't find my glasses at first. They were right on my, right over my eyes, put on my head. So hopefully things will go better than that, and I can read better now. I was looking at Pluto, and there was, as I mentioned, very little known about Pluto until last year when the New Horizons mission flew, or a year and a half ago when the New Horizons mission flew by, took some wonderful pictures, sent some data. Now we're going to peek over Saturn's shoulders. Well, what's that? Saturn, as you know, is very easily seen in the night sky with a telescope, and we can see it without a telescope, but when you put it into the crosshairs of a telescope, it's absolutely gorgeous. It looks like it's a computer computer-drawn image. That's how beautiful it is. It doesn't look real. It looks too nice to be real. So we can see Saturn from the Earth. But now I'm going to read about another one, peeking over Saturn's shoulders, where we see the side of the planet that we usually can't see because we have a spacecraft up there, Cassini. So the article is called Peeking Over Saturn's Shoulders. It's January 17th, 2017. I'm going to start the article now. No Earth-based telescope could ever capture a view quite like this. Earth-based views can only show Saturn's daylit side from within about 25 degrees of Saturn's equatorial plane. So, there is the side of Saturn which is in the dark, and we can never see that. We can only see the daylit side. A spacecraft in orbit, though, like Cassini, can capture stunning scenes that would be impossible from our home planet. This view, so it's a beautiful view of Saturn. It's partly under a dim shadow, and part of it is not, but the rings are beautiful. They're shining in the background. Not as bright as usual, but the top, you can see the top of Saturn with this hexagon on the top. This view looks towards the sunlit side of the rings from about 25 degrees. If Saturn is dominant, image above the ring plane. The image was taken in violet light with the Cassini spacecraft wide-angle camera on October 28, 2016. The view was obtained at a distance of approximately 810,000 miles, or 1.3 million kilometers, from Saturn. Image scale is 50 miles per pixel. The Cassini mission is a cooperative project of NASA, ESA, and the Italian Space Agency. So this is a beautiful image of Saturn. Now let's look at something called, where I had black holes inside our cosmic backyard. And let's see if I could pull that up. Okay. Now we have a galaxy, a picture of a galaxy called NGC 1448, a galaxy with an active galactic nuclei hidden by gas and dust as seen in this image. It's in www.nasa.gov, and New Star is one of the telescopes of NASA in our orbiting Earth. So it's titled January 7th, 2017. I'm going to read the article now. Monster black holes sometimes lurk behind gas and dust, hiding from the gaze of most telescopes. But they give themselves away when material they feed on emits high-energy X-rays. So when black holes devour material, there's a big traffic jam. A lot of material circles the black hole. And when it does this, it rubs against each other. It gets hot and it emits radiation. So I'm going to start again from the beginning with no interjections there. Article is called Black Holes Hide in Our Cosmic Backyard, dated January 7th, 2017, on www.nasa.gov. So here goes the article again. Monster black holes sometimes lurk behind gas and dust, hiding from the gaze of most telescopes. But they give themselves away when material they feed on emits high-energy X-rays that NASA's New Star, so NUSTAR, Nuclear Spectroscopic, Nuclear Spectroscopic Telescope Array, that's New Star, mission can detect. That's how New Star recently identified two enshrouded supermassive black holes located at the center of nearby galaxies. So let's, a stellar mass black hole, for example, like the ones that gave off the gravitational waves last year, they were about 35 masses of the sun. And another pair of black holes, one was about 19 masses of the sun, another was about 16 masses of the sun. These are called stellar mass black holes. But monster black holes are in the center of galaxies usually, and they can be millions or billions times the mass of the sun. So these are monster, giant black holes. So says A.D. Anar, a graduate student at Durham University in the United Kingdom, and quote, "These black holes are relatively close to the Milky Way, but they have remained hidden from us until now. They're like monsters hiding under your bed." Now that's a good analogy. But these black holes are a million times the size of the sun, the mass of the sun, so they're giant monsters hiding under the bed. Both of these black holes are the central engines of what astronomers call active galactic nuclei, a class of extremely bright objects that includes quasars and blazars. Depending on how these galactic nuclei are oriented and one sort of material surrounds them, they appear very different when examined with telescope. Now, what I thought were quasars were the early signatures of our universe. They're very far away, and this apparently are two black holes located at the centers of nearby galaxies. So I thought quasars were remnants of the early universe. So let's read on to see what this said about it. Active galactic nuclei are so bright because particles in the regions around the black hole get very hot and emit radiation across the full electromagnetic spectrum, from low energy radio waves to high energy X-rays. However, most active galactic nuclei are believed to be surrounded by a donut-shaped region of thick gas and dust that obscures the central regions from certain lines of sight. Both of the active galactic nuclei that New Star recently studied appear to be oriented such that astronomers view them edge on. That means that instead of seeing the bright central regions, our telescopes primarily see the reflected X-rays from the donut-shaped obscuring material. Just as we can't see the sun on a cloudy day, we can't directly see how bright these active galactic nuclei really are, because of all the gas and dust surrounding the central engine. More surprisingly, there's another one called IC3639 contains an example of an obscured supermassive black hole. So before this, they couldn't see this. Now, says the professor Daniel Stern, quote, "It is exciting to use the power of new star to get important, unique information on these beasts, even in our cosmic backyard where they can be studied in detail." Well, you know what? I have to run. I got to go to work. So hopefully next week I can stay longer. So this is Marco. You've been listening to Astrotalk on CITR 101.9.